here with Paul Masvidal of the band Cynic. And Paul, it's great to have you on the show and talk about what you currently have going on with Cynic and your new album and everything like that.
Well, at the moment, we're just in promoting mode with the record that came out mid-February, County Event to Free It, and it's exciting. You know, it's an exciting time for us. We're happy to finally share another body of work with the audience and get out there and hopefully start doing some touring. I think we're planning on. So right now, it's looking like the summer when we're going to hit the road, but we might do some stuff before then. But, yeah, that's about it, really. It's just good to be back in action, you know?
Well, Paul, you've brought the Cynic thing back again. I mean, obviously, back in 2007, 2008, you brought the band back, and it had been a long time. You had one debut album, and that was pretty much it. And what made you decide to bring Cynic back to the masses?
Well, it was officially 2007, I guess, when we reunited. Around the beginning of 2007, we had a series of synchronicities where Cynic kind of just appeared a lot in my life through friends and other people in my... It was just a really interesting situation where I hadn't really thought about Cynic for, a good 10-plus years, and had no intention of revisiting the band. We were broken up for good. And then suddenly, Cynic was all over me, all over the place. Like, for a two-week period, it was literally friends, people, synchronicities. It started with I talked about this in the press when we first reunited. It all started with a letter from a fan from Russia who said he had a dream. He wrote me a letter, a physical letter, actually, to my P.O. box, saying that he had a dream that he saw Cynic play at a festival, reunited. It made him really happy, all this stuff. And then one thing led to another, and before you knew it, I think the last straw was Kelly from Atheist calling me, who had at that time put Atheist back together, and he just said, there's a real audience out there for you guys. People want to hear what you're doing, man. They want to hear your songs again, or want to hear them, period, because I don't think they ever did back then. And so I was so blown away, because I had no idea that there was any even residue with Cynic or Focus. I thought it was just kind of dead in the water. We decided to get back together and do some dates, and that went so well that we got inspired and said, let's make a record, you know? So the whole thing's been really bizarre and interesting, and I don't understand it at all, you know? I just, again, it makes life feel real magical when it happens, because you think you have a hold of this journey you're on, and you realize, or at least I did, that I have no idea what's coming on a day-to-day basis and what's unfolding. I have no control over this. And I'm just showing up and trying to give it all I got, you know? So, we ended up making a record, which was Traced in Air, which basically came out in 2009, December of 2008, and have been really active since, which has been great.
You know, Paul, you put out a debut album, obviously entitled Focus, back in 1993, and it's kind of like you put that one album out, and, you know, some people didn't understand it. It was a little bit misunderstood, you know, as far as an album goes, and not a lot of people really got it. But did you think years and years later people would come to you and say, hey, this album was amazing, make more?
Not at all. I mean, my memories of Cynic were bottles being thrown at stage, people saying you suck, and a series of horrible reviews of Focus. And so, no, I did not expect anything. And that's the whole point, is that it was totally unbelievable. And it really was the result of, started with bands, you know, started with people like bands like Meshuggah and Opeth talking about us and kind of saying that we influenced them. You know, I think that was a big factor that some of our contemporaries, even Slipknot, I mean, stuff like that, like, we're just out there running around saying Cynic or Bull, and you got to check out this crazy record they made. And then I think also there was an underground fan community that didn't really know each other, because it was just pre-internet, but eventually post-internet, it just, they all kind of found each other, and it expanded, and before we knew it, there was a lot of them out there, but they didn't really get to come together. So it was, you know, the nature of technology and just the time, you know, people opening themselves up to something that maybe wasn't ready for people back then. It just inevitably found its way, which is a testimony to the power of good art and music. You know, it tells me that there's no time date on good songwriting and good art. We don't, there's no sense of urgency. It exists on its own field of vibration, and it gets heard when it's heard. And all you can do is put it out there and let it go, you know, and hope for the best.
So let's talk about the new album, Kindly Bent to Free Us, and let's talk a little bit about what went into the album, maybe talk a little bit about, you know, some of the lyrics and things like that.
Well, I mean, it's really hard to be objective about your own work. I always find I can tell you, like, the steps involved, which is every record pretty much comes from a pool of material that I'm writing. I'm always writing songs. And when I get a song kind of flushed out to where I like it, I do a demo of it, and it's just an acoustic demo, usually guitar and vocals, and it's fairly like flushed out, you know, a little arrangement of like a little prog folk song, and then I give that to the guys, and they start working on rhythmic ideas, and we go in the room and we jam, and we kind of suss out more details in terms of the arrangement, tempos, you know, time signatures. We just decide how we play with it a little bit and bring it into a trio context. And then we do like another set of demos, you know, at more of the band, and then probably another set of demos even after that that's more production based, that kind of where we're going sonically in terms of interpreting the sections of the production. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what it's going to sound like. I don't know what we're doing. We just kind of do it, you know, and then we kind of listen after and we go, oh, yeah, okay, you know, this is what's going on. And with the lyrics, it's pretty much the same thing. I'm interested in telling the truth, you know, so that's kind of a task in itself. I feel like as a writer, always a journey to subtract and to get to the distill, you know, something to its essence and to say something honest. And so I feel like that's what really the lyrics are all about, is just trying to be as honest as possible about something. And a lot of times it's cloaked in metaphors and abstract ideas, but that's kind of how I perceive things. A lot of times I live in a somewhat metaphorical, imaginative world as an artist, so it seems like the lyrics become really transparent to me in that way, and then eventually people get it for themselves. But yeah, on this record, it's definitely an extremely personal album, and it's really a journey into the mind, you know, a relationship with one's own mind, and the title of the record is a direct metaphor to that. The artwork, it's kind of looking at this mind of ours and how it's, you know, the source of all of our pain and suffering, but also can very much be the source of our freedom and our liberation. So it's kind of that journey inward, you know, and eventually outward. That's pretty much what the record explores.
Now, you had a couple EPs come out right before this album. Maybe talk a bit about those as well.
Yeah, Retraced was we had like a month between tours. We toured for almost 2 years straight for Traced in Air, and we had this like month or so off where we thought what the most constructive use of it was, and I think that we realized that those songs had another face, you know, they always do, and I thought it would be interesting for fans to hear the roots of those songs that, you know, obviously came out pretty heavy on the record, but to hear like this organic, kind of electronic, organic synthesis of the demos of the song. So we re-recorded everything and built them from scratch as like new productions, but it was kind of stripping away the metal kind of garb and or heavy rock thing and just going more into experimenting, you know, and showing like this other side to this music. really where a lot of it starts, is demo. And believing that that still is cynic, you know, that's still part of our language. And then we had a newer song on there called Wheels Within Wheels, just to kind of break it up and have a different kind of tune. And then Carbon-Based Anatomy was, again, you know, these two EPs were happening essentially when I was working on this record, but they were just like detours. Carbon-Based Anatomy was, for me, like a purgative healing thing. It had to do with a combination of things. I do volunteer work with terminally ill people, and I had a patient that basically turned my whole life, changed my life. He was an 80-year-old man who died of pancreatic cancer, and I was with him till the end. And he was this courageous, enlightened soul that died so beautifully and openly that I felt like a lot of the record explored that. So it was just that, like, and we had some legal situations with an ex-manager that was putting us in this kind of really rough spot. I mean, it was a really trying time emotionally. There was a lot going on for us. We were in a very transitional place and in our lives. And so that record was kind of a purgative, therapeutic kind of exercise. And then we got back to Kindly Bent to Free Us. But Carbon is a very ambient, kind of dense, layered work in comparison to Kindly, which is more stripped down and raw and trio-like. Carbon-Based Anatomy has got a lot of, it's just dense, you know. There's probably 20, 30 guitar tracks on some of those songs. And so it's just a different kind of vibe. It was a different headspace, but it very much documents the period of time, which is pretty cool.
Now, Cynic always seems to be, you know, one of these bands that is, you know, has put out some great music and it's doing really well for you. But, you know, Focus was a great album. And I'm just curious why things didn't take off for you back in 1993 when that first album came out.
I think that, at least my experience of the metal scene that we were in, it was very, like, although there was some envelope pushing in terms of the extremities, and we were certainly one of those bands, it felt like there was this paradox going on that people were embracing, you know, being envelope pushing and creative, but not, and it was within certain parameters. And the scene, you know, having been put out on tour with, you know, our first U.S. tour with Cannibal Corpse, I just felt this, like, Paleolithic kind of thing in the metal community that we didn't connect with, which was all about brutality and, you know, testosterone and just being aggressive and mean and brutal. And that was never Cynic's motto, you know. Brutality and aggression was one of our components, but we were all also interested in beauty and melody and dynamics. So we did things on our own terms as musicians that were being honest about our process. And people didn't really like that. They wanted us to, they said, who are these freaks, you know? You can't wear Indian garbs on stage and have a chick growling playing keyboards. Like, that ain't cool, you know? And so it broke, it pushed people out of their comfort zones, and it broke, you know, a lot of the stereotypes that were going on at that time. And it wasn't the most acceptable thing as a result. You know, it became difficult for us, but that's, I think, the price you pay for following your heart and trusting in your own creative process and going against the grain, you know. And I wouldn't have done it any other way, you know. That's kind of, that our own stubbornness is what led to that music, and it's led to what is going on now. So it's just the nature of the metal scene. It's come a long way. It's not what it used to be. You know, it's way more open-minded. Experimenting is way more tolerated, you know. There's just a lot more bands doing different things and subgenres and prog, and, you know, it's cool, you know. It's just more open now. Back then it was kind of all or nothing, so we've come a long way.
So, Paul, do you guys have any plans for any touring right now, anything going on from that standpoint?
Not yet. I mean, we have some stuff in the summer, but nothing, no full tours yet. We're planning on it, though.
Now, what kind of stuff, other stuff besides Cynic, have you done musically? I know you've had some other bands out there, and you've collaborated with some other people musically, and, you know, talk about some of the other things you have going on.
Well, we've been working composers in L.A. since we moved here, basically since 96. I went back to school, and then I started working in film and TV, so I've been working as a composer and session guitarist in the media world for a long time outside of Cynic. And just last month, a couple months ago, I produced a children's record for actor Jim Carrey. I have this pilot for NBC going right now. You know, we're doing all kinds of different projects all the time. We did a big series for the H2 channel called The History of Sex. You know, we're kind of all over the map. We're working musicians. We had a band that released a record in 07. Was it 07 or was it? Yeah, I think it was 07 actually. Called Eon Spoke, came out on SPV Records, and it was more of like an ambient rock kind of thing, more folk driven. You name it, every day is a new adventure for me. I have a new project now with my friend Amy Correa called House of Spirits. It's really kind of nylon string guitar and really kind of mellow female vocals with kind of environmental sounds. It's fun. There's all kinds of fun stuff happening.
Well, it's pretty cool that you're doing stuff for film, and do you approach that stuff a lot differently than, say, writing stuff for Cynic or maybe some of your other musical projects?
Totally. I mean, Cynic is art for art's sake, you know. It's a band that is driven by purely process and with no goal in mind other than just to do it. We've got a sheer pleasure, and there are no rules. There's no boundaries. When you're working in the context of composing for TV or film or even, you know, like for Jim Carrey or something, you're under certain parameters, and it's a wonderful opportunity to play a different role, to wear a new hat and be a different kind of musician, which I think is really good for me. I love it. Again, with Cynic, it's kind of just like do whatever you want, and it's nice to kind of have certain parameters and have to fit into, you know, just be essentially a cog in a wheel serving someone else. Vision. I love that. So it's healthy, you know, it's good for the work ethic.
It seems when bands have no pressure and they decide to do it doing art for art's sake, sometimes you seem to get a better album out of them.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I don't know, maybe. It seems to help me. I just like wearing different hats. I like to be a nobody in a machine, you know, occasionally and just just show up and play my role and get out, you know. It's nice to do it all, you know. It's as a musician, it's just nice to be making music, and regardless of whether it's for me or someone else, I'm just grateful to be able to play my guitar and make a living playing it. Pretty damn cool, you know.
Now, how's the response been for this album? You know, how's the response been so far for the new record?
It seems to be good based on the people I'm talking to. I don't read reviews or follow the press much intentionally, but in terms of what I'm getting back from friends and kind of the scene in general and the press, it just seems to be, you know, at least for the interviews I'm doing, everyone seems to be really positive, and my friends like it, and, you know, of course, touring will say a lot, too, in terms of getting out there and playing some shows, but it seems to be cool, you know? It's all good stuff. I mean, the record just charted on Billboard. You know, it's number 4 on Heat Seekers, which is a big deal for a band like us. We've never even been on a chart, you know? So there's some good stuff happening.
Before Cynic, you know, put out their first album, you were playing in a few death metal bands down in Florida. And what made you decide to say, you know what, I want to form a band that has a lot of diversity and all the crazy elements that go into Cynic? I mean, you know, what led to this? And what gave you the idea to form a band like this?
Well, Cynic existed before we played with Master and before I played with Death. It was a band that I actually had in high school. And so it was always my little project that Sean and I had. It was a passionate labor of love. And over the years, it sound expanded and developed. I think as an artist, is when I kind of found my voice, essentially, which I feel like Focus was really a realized kind of work. It was that. It was like, oh, this is what we're doing. But it was really the result of just being an artist that was interested in growing and expanding, having some really good teachers that opened my mind to new music and had me, encouraged me to learn new music and to play different forms of music. And I grew up playing classical guitar. I got into jazz in college. I was always open to different forms of pop and rock and, you name it. It was always about keeping my mind open and using all of that to make interesting art. So Cynic really is kind of the amalgamation of just living an open life and taking music in on its varying degrees and letting that inspire us, you know.
Now, you're a session musician, of course, as well. And are there any people out there you would love to collaborate with musically?
Oh, Brian Eno, he's probably one of my biggest influences. Huge fan of his body of work. It'd be amazing to make the music or with him or make a record or have him produce something. I don't know. And just to be in his presence, he's a master. Like a Keith Jarrett, one of the great pianists, I probably would be so nervous I couldn't touch my guitar. But I have, like, a lot of mentors that, and people that I've looked up to that inspired me. Pat Metheny, I don't know, it's all over the map, man. I feel like there's so many different types of writers and musicians and people out there that would I like being around people that whose creativity inspires me, and who are just driven by art and creation. So any of those guys would be phenomenal. They're all still alive, thankfully. I don't know. It's I feel like if I sat down, I could probably make a gigantic list, but those are the three that come to mind right now.
Now, you happen to play on an album by Death called Human, and I don't really like death metal that much, but Death was one of the bands that I really did like out of that genre. And what was it like for you to play with a guy like Chuck Schuldiner, who really helped define that genre of music, and it was just so influential and such a great musician?
Chuck was like an older brother. I knew him since I was a teenager in high school. It was like playing with your bud, a friend, who you had a lot in common with, and we just loved to play guitar and listen to music together, and it was just inevitable that we would make a record together, it was just like jamming with a bud, get stoned, play guitar, hang out, eat, talk about things. I mean, pretty low key, it was just. But he was like this older brother. He had a more experience. He got a record deal pretty early on, pretty young, and he was definitely getting his feet wet. And he was a smart guy, So it was great. Chuck was really brought me into the music business, essentially. So I'm always grateful for that.
Well,
I learned a lot from him.
Well, Paul, I'm going to be quite honest with you. I really, really love what you've been doing the last few years and, of course, some of the other stuff that you've done over the years. And it's great to see you back with Cynic and putting out some awesome music again.
I appreciate that, Tony. Thank you. That's what it's all about, I feel like the duty of an artist, I think Emerson said this, is like the ultimate highest thing you can do as an artist is to inspire other artists, and if some people are getting pleasure or feeling some satisfaction, and the other musicians inspired to pick up their instruments and play. Man, how cool is that? It's returning the gift, that was given to me. So I'm grateful, that's really what this is all about.
Well, Paul, one last question for you, and it's a question I ask every band on the show. Any last words to say to your fans that are going to be checking out this interview?
Thanks for listening. Listen, check out some of the music and thanks again.
Yeah.